hello and welcome to another Lattice episode. I'm joined today by Caroline Ciavaldini, who is a well-known French climber. And today we're going to talk quite a lot about her experiences of being pregnant as a climber, postpartum, and then climbing with a young child. So to give you a bit of background on Cara, she's a super experienced climber, a long history of competition climbing in her early career, and then more of a shift to outdoor climbing and lots of traveling and adventure climbing. So Cara's no slouch. She's climbed up to 8C+, E9, and lots of multi-pitch adventures as well. Her and her husband, James Pearson, travel and climb and have done so extensively since having a child as well. So we're going to talk quite a bit about that today. So before we go into the kind of nitty-gritty of having children and being a climber, can you tell us a bit more about your climbing background before you decided to have children?
Well, I think you've got it all right. You did your research very well. I don't know what I could add. Let's say I was not meant to be an adventure climber in the sense that I just grew up as a normal kid who was afraid of normal things. And I kind of really had a second life after my competition career because I met James. And none of my teammates made sense, so I had to understand a bit. And I think having a child, I call it my third life as a climber because it's completely different again.
Okay, that's cool. And obviously a huge factor in how your life with a child is and how that whole experience is for you is the initial one of pregnancy. And obviously there'll be women watching or listening to this that will have had very, you know, variable pregnancy experiences. And we all know that there's no kind of one way through that.
If only.
But I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your experience of being pregnant. Like, were you super sick and tired, or were you kind of okay, or did you climb throughout your whole pregnancy?
Right, that's a lot of questions. So,
sorry.
No, I think I had a really easy pregnancy. I mean, I'm not saying it's not five star, let's have the best year of your life, you know, right?
Yeah.
But I didn't get that sick in the first 3 months, which could happen. And I just had much more snoozes. I don't know if that's happening for you. I just happened to sleep. I was sleeping like 2 hours at least every day in a day.
Oh, napping in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found, so I'm, for the record, anyone listening, I'm 20 weeks pregnant at the moment. And yeah, I found more in my first trimester. I had to nap in the day a lot. Now in my second trimester, so long as I get like a solid about 10 hours a night, I don't have to have a nap in the day. So I just go to bed super early.
Just to ground my life, but apart from that, it's great.
Yeah, but it's 2020, so there's nothing to do anyway, right? So I may as well get loads of sleep.
So yeah, to go back to, yeah, I had loads of naps, but I could be very active.
Mm-hmm.
I really found loads of things felt really bad. Like hiking, I just couldn't hike. But in general, I've always hated running. So I think it might have been like the best excuse in my life to not go on hikes.
Mm-hmm.
But climbing was always 100% fine. So I climbed until I was 8 months pregnant. And I think, yeah, until 4 months and a half, actually, I kept on leading. And then it just didn't really feel right when I got 4 months and a half pregnant. And of course, if you go to your doctor, a gynecologist, and ask, I think 99% of the time the answer is stop climbing when you're pregnant. But I think people have seen Alex Honnold, you know? They think this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe don't die when you're pregnant. So I decided from the very beginning to just completely ignore my doctor's advice because they just don't, there is not much information. And I had really a good extra bit of information from a really good friend of mine who is a midwife and an extremely good climber. She's a 8C+ climber, so clearly she understands a lot about the female bodies. And she told me from the very beginning, just listen to your body. Like, how does it feel? What does feel right? And just listen to yourself. And I think she was super right in the sense that, I mean, I'm not saying if you don't feel confident, maybe you should listen to what people say. But if you feel like you understand the sensations going through your body, and usually that's the case when you're an athlete, then you can just trust yourself.
Yeah.
It's just a normal process, just like a lot of other processes.
And it gives you something to anchor in on as well, because I think, like you've said, there's not much information out there. And when you do get information, it's quite vague. I feel like there's this old traditional, like, you should just rest and, like, don't pick up anything heavy, you know, like, don't get people to carry your bags kind of mentality. And then there's the, so long, do what you've always done. Like, if you were doing it before, carry on. But for some things, that's not appropriate either. So I think trusting your body is probably the best way to go. I've been the same as you. I'm about 5 months now, and I am still... It's winter in England, so it's more a bit like indoor lead climbing a little bit, but only on things like the warm-ups, you know, just so I feel a little bit normal. I lead some warm-ups, but I haven't fallen off for the last, you know, 2 months or something. And as soon as I start trying anything harder, I'm on a top rope.
If it doesn't feel right, just don't do it. If it feels right, do it, period. I think it's... And in terms of like less climbing centric stuff, I was researching in France. Everybody says no sushi, because apparently raw fish is super dangerous. In Japan, everybody says sushi is very good for pregnant women, and in the UK, everybody says no cheese for pregnant women because cheese are so dangerous. In France, nobody cares about the cheese.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
So, exactly. Like, so I basically decided I'm going to take whatever's best from each country. In Finland, the pregnant women do sauna, no problem, until they give birth. In France, again, this is like, oh, no, you shouldn't do that. So clearly, if a whole country was doing that, it can't be that bad.
It's really interesting, that, isn't it? Yeah, super interesting. I hadn't thought really
about
that.
Yeah, if there's something you feel frustrated, find a country where you can do it and just accept it.
And you don't have to go there for that to be okay.
Yeah, exactly. Of course not.
Cool. And did you have much kind of pain or anything, like physical pain when you were... because I know for a lot of women, I'm not quite there yet, so I guess I'll find out. But towards the end, there can be quite a lot of back pain and things like that that can limit activity.
So I think, again, two things. I had a really active pregnancy, just because I was still a pain in the ass, but because that's my nature. But I had to be really active to be okay with the people around me. Mm-hmm. And so I think I didn't lose my back muscles as much as some people usually do. So it was okay. I think nowadays people really recommend, if you can and it feels right, a really active pregnancy, because you will recover much faster. So no, I mean maybe I'm forgetting. I'm not saying it was all rose or anything.
Sure.
I'm just trying to think. I definitely had a lot of troubles with digesting. So I had to always, I was saying, I have to go spread my belly. I had to, every time after I ate, I had to go lie down.
Oh, really? Okay, wow.
Yeah. So it was a bit annoying, obviously. But if it's your first child, you've got the time, right? So you can just go on your own agenda. Can you imagine with another kid, it's another game?
Yeah, different. I've definitely found recently, actually only in the last couple of weeks or 2 to 3 weeks, I have had to switch to having smaller meals. Because if I eat the same size meals that I still have the appetite for, that's the frustrating thing. I'm still hungry enough for like a normal sized meal, right? But then I have a stomach ache for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
So I have to eat like maybe five times a day, but smaller things.
Which is great on one side.
Which is also great because you're never that far away from your next snack. But still, sometimes, you know, when everyone else has this big normal plate of food and you're like, I'm hungry too, but I don't want to feel...
I definitely want. I have forgotten actually, but yeah, this definitely happened. I think that's really normal. I mean, it's just there's no more space for the stomach.
Yeah, and progesterone. Like, I think some of the hormones that go up in pregnancy, like progesterone, actually slow down your digestive tract. So a lot of women suffer with like flatulence and constipation and all the other wonderful things that you get with pregnancy.
Yeah, I'm skipping. Like, nothing wrong happened to me on this stuff, but it's just a bit too private.
We don't have to go everywhere. Yeah. And so when we move into talking about postpartum period, obviously like birthing experience has a lot to do with how you recover postpartum. Did you have a positive birth experience? And
nope.
No. Okay.
I did not. I didn't find, well, I'm sorry because you're heading there. It's all right. Everybody has to tell you you're going to be fine. I just found it was really like the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And I've done some toughish things and scary-ish things. But I thought it's, even if it's 21st century, it looks really scary. You just think there's a chance your baby will come out with some issues because the birth was too long. Mine was 32 hours. And that's really quite standard, like really long birth if you're active. Because so I did, it's called, I think it's French. I don't even find it in the UK at all. It's called aptonomia.
Okay.
It's a midwife, actually, who had a special method. I mean, it's everywhere in France. And basically, you speak with the baby and you definitely, you invite the baby to come to the world. It's kind of up there in the air.
A little hippie.
But I mean, it's supposed to make your birth experience much nicer. Mm-hmm. So I think the main back thing is to teach you to mentally relax your muscles and also prepare the baby. I really strongly, okay, this is up in the air, but in Japan, I'm talking a lot about Japan because I went to Japan when I was pregnant. They have a word for education in the belly.
Mm-hmm.
They say that the baby learns a lot of things when he is inside you.
Mm-hmm.
And I really felt like this was really happening.
Mm.
So I had a lot of conversation, and not just me, James had a lot of conversation with Arthur, just to explain him what was going to happen day on, day off. And it just felt like we could explain him what the birth would be like.
Okay.
And not necessarily with words, but with emotions or... Mm. Yeah, so maybe this is just too far-fetched for loads of people. But it didn't work so well with birth anyway. So I just found it really difficult. And nowadays, this is the hardest moment for sure. Because it lasted a really long time. And it's painful and it's scary.
Mm.
And it's really not great for the dad either, because he's pretty helpless.
I can imagine, yeah.
You'll get there.
Yeah.
But it's great. 21st century, you have much better chances nowadays. So.
Yeah. And it's really interesting to talk to someone who's so open about it, because, again, it's like with pregnancy, you get these really mixed messages of the old-fashioned view being like, it's scary and dangerous and hard and painful and all these anxiety-building things that we're not supposed to think about now in the run-up to labour. But then you also... I also find that sometimes this, oh, you're going to be fine, it's totally natural, it's all going to be fine, also kind of underprepares
I think this is a reality. A lot of women come and think they will have the, I don't know what you call it in English,
oh,
the
like
injection.
A cesarean or, oh no, like an epidural.
The epidural, and they won't feel a thing. And that even, I mean, I chose not to have an epidural. Maybe it's a dumb choice. That was my choice. But apparently, even with an epidural, it is still really painful.
Mm.
People don't really talk about it, and also it could be 100% fine. Like we had like a birth book in the maternity, because we stayed there for like 5 days.
Mm.
It was New Year. We had New Year in the maternity. Great,
nice.
28th of December. And actually I could read, because they made me write in my experience in the birth book, where you're supposed to say it was wonderful, except I wrote I found it really, really difficult. And I mean, I had a really good health team around me and they were great, but I just found this was the worst experience of my life. And I was reading other moms' experience, and this is like most empowering day of my life, and I'm like, what? So I don't know, I guess it can be very different.
Yeah, it can be. And I certainly know people that have been really quite frightened of labor and then have had really using their words, euphoric experiences. So I think it can be really variable, and probably there's loads of different factors that play into the experience that you have.
Yeah. But if you want a positive feedback, you have to talk to Emma Flaherty.
I have already. She's primed me really well.
Yeah, she's very technical. There are a lot of ways to technically prepare you. I don't know. I think this is very private.
Well, she did, and a lot of people now in the UK, it seems to be quite popular to do hypnobirthing. Is that something that you did at all?
No. I did this other method, which should have helped. Maybe it did. Maybe it would have been worse. I don't know.
Okay.
But yeah, Emma had a really long birth again. And maybe she doesn't want me to go into much detail, but she found it a really positive experience.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
And it was a home birth as well.
Yeah, home birth as well. Yeah.
Which I would never dare to go there. But it's really quite common in the UK.
Yeah, more and more common. Yeah, I've had quite a few family members have home births and with really positive experiences and friends. Yeah. I guess different systems are set up in different ways and we're all primed in different ways as well. And I feel like hypnobirthing, again, I'm talking without having had the experience, but it's quite popular and seems to be quite a positive trend, at least from an outsider's, someone who hasn't done it perspective. It seems like a good thing.
Well, I will definitely try something different if I decide to have another kid. I'm open to any suggestions.
So maybe we can talk a bit about your postpartum experience as well then. So when Arthur was born, obviously postpartum is just from then onwards. You now have a two-year-old, so it's the last couple of years. But maybe we can start with that initial period of time. And obviously thinking about you as a person and an individual outside of climbing, but also as a climber and an athlete, like you've already gone through that mental shift of being pregnant and that affecting your relationship with climbing, because although you were still climbing, that will have shifted,
you use your
body differently. And then when Arthur arrived, how was that for you?
So I'm trying to put my thoughts in order. I'm talking about me, but James and I, we've been really on the same boat that.
Sure.
Not necessarily because he was originally planning to have things happen like that, but because I didn't really give him a choice. I'm quite a feminist, and I think a baby is a two people choice, and
Absolutely. And
so you take the good and you take the bad together. So it changed my life as a climber, and it definitely changed James' life as a climber. And I think overall it's been extremely positive. A lot of that is because we were two on that boat, and I'm not saying you can't do that alone. Because it happens. Sometimes you have to go through a baby's birth alone. I had James, and I use him a lot, and I think it makes him a great dad as well. So in terms of, I had a lot of vision on what kind of climber I would become, and I had it in my head, I'm not going to change at all. We're doing a movie actually at the minute about it. It's been 2 years in the making because with Chris Prescott from Dark Sky Media and The North Face. We started when I was pregnant, and I remember interviews where I was like, yeah, I will climb AT again. No problem. This is the kind of climber I am. I'm stubborn. I'll get back there. And I just got back now. I just did my first AT, but Arthur's 2 years old, and I didn't think it was going to take that long. And I definitely didn't think it was going to be that difficult. So I think it was difficult because the first thing is when you have a baby, I think it's just normal maternal instinct. You have this tendency to let yourself disappear behind your baby.
Okay.
I don't think it happens to everybody. It just, it was really a temptation because... So you got this new baby who really takes physically all of your time. And I'm not going to go very far in that because it's just normal parenthood. And I'm sure there are a million podcasts about what it is to be the parent of a newborn. There is no physical space, time for being a climber. And your body is really not ready to climb at all. So you have this temptation to just let yourself... be only answering your kids' needs because I think it's just very natural. And I can totally understand why a lot of moms have this temptation to take several years away from work because it seems super natural and really easy. I didn't do that for the first reason is that I was really lucky. My sponsors were super understanding. So when I told them I was pregnant, for example, the North Face renewed my contract after I told them I was pregnant. So I couldn't really tell them, right, I'm about a 3-year contract and now I'm just going to spend 3 years doing nothing. I couldn't face myself doing that. So I had several motivations to come back as a climber, like personal motivation and then professional motivation. In another different life, I could have done otherwise, and I would have never thought I would be that kind of person.
Yeah,
I'm more patient now, but I would say one of my main characters is I'm not very patient, and climbing is really important in my life. So to be like, I'm not saying I would have stopped climbing, but I would have stopped projecting.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I don't know, how is it in your head at the minute?
It's tricky because I feel like at this stage, you know, I'm kind of mid-pregnancy, I guess. It's really hard to predict. So I feel like I don't really know. I also haven't been in my best shape for a while, because it took me, you know, another story, but it took me a bit to kind of restore my periods.
I know this other story. I've been following it. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not the subject, but... You wrote a text about Redis, and I thought it was so interesting. I had it translated for French people.
Oh, amazing.
So I didn't tell you. I think I've been exactly in the same stage as you, like, long time ago.
Okay.
Just like you said, I think if you look at the guys of the competition scene, I think 80% at the very least are in that situation. Nobody talks about it because, I mean, nobody knows. Yeah. When I read your paper, it was the very first time I was like, right, these are the right words on all the things that I already know.
Mm.
So I think this deserves more attention. But I mean, that's...
Oh, thank you.
I think it's a super important subject in climbing because it's a direct problem for future moms.
Yeah.
And it's a problem for future dads as well, I think, in certain cases.
Yeah, certainly. And I think in the context of being pregnant now, for me, it took me a while to get to this point, even though it didn't actually take us like a super long time to get pregnant. It took me quite a long time to get my menstruation back. So, and that came hand in hand with a drop of performance because I had to gain some weight and change a lot of my habits. So I think I haven't gone from being like super strong at the top of my game to suddenly pregnant to then expecting to go back to super strong at the top of my game. And in a way, maybe that's done me some favors psychologically because I feel like it's, yeah, I'm not as attached to it as I was.
I'm not saying you should be expecting yourself to perform at a grade level. I think, I really want to, this is a mistake that I know I just said it.
Mm.
I had a grade in my mind, but it wasn't really that. It was more about like pushing myself.
Yeah.
Grades are meaningless. Mm. I mean, we can spend 6 years having conversations about grades and it will still be meaningless.
Mm.
So I think it's really just about, like creating that mental space in your head and where this is just your climbing. So it's a space for you. I think this is why I think it's important.
Yeah. And that is something that I would really like to keep hold of. But I don't know how naive I'm being going into this expecting that. And I think, like you said with James, like a huge part of the process with being an athlete and a mum is your partner and the dynamic there. And I think sounds like you've got a really good thing going there in terms of shared role and responsibility and support, because you do essentially need your partner to step up a bit more.
Yeah.
And because you've both got the sleep deprivation, you've both got the child to look after, but you've also got the physical recovery.
I will get into that for sure. You have no idea actually.
So how was your physical recovery?
So I think you're right. You have to be two in that boat because you're rowing and the current is completely against you. And so you're this young mom, your belly's floppy, you're already disgusted with yourself physically because after birth, you're not at the very best.
Sure.
I personally struggle with like sense of my own self, because I mean, we are athletes, we are attached to our body images a little bit. You want to be fit. I don't care about having big boobs was actually a really not positive side for me. What I wanted was just feel like I was in a good physical shape, and I've always been able to see my abdominals, and obviously they're not even there anymore, so I can't see them. So you're this exhausted person with like the worst ever shape of your life, because this is, I think we have to compare pregnancy and birth to like a really severe injury, because it's not any easier than that. For the people who don't know, your abdominal just have to separate sideways, so to give space for the belly to grow, and you have all these hormones that completely change the reactions of your tendons. So your body is completely unresponsive, basically, and you haven't been able to train for a long time. You've got this extra weight. You're totally lacking sleep and time. And you suddenly, you're asking your body to recover. And not only, you're not going back from zero. You're coming from a negative point. Because, like, I realized after baby, when I was, so 1 month and a half after baby, the midwife had given me a lot of exercises, and I was really trying to follow them, just to, because even before working on your abdominals, you have to work on your pelvic muscles. Otherwise, it could be a recipe for disaster. So once I had a green light to start climbing, I started climbing, and I was just terribly, terribly bad. Despite having had an active pregnancy. I realized soon that it was two things. It was my abdos were gone, and I had never had no core in my life, because I started climbing when I was 12, so I didn't even know what it was to have no core. But it was, I mean, on one side it was great, because I knew what a beginning climber feels like, you know, when you're keep your feet on and you don't understand what it
is. Yeah, and you lose that connection almost.
Exactly. So physically, the muscles were not there anymore. But also, I realized once I started training again, I had lost the mental chain. You know, when you say, I'm going to put my foot there and then put the body tension, you have this mental chain of all the muscles you're going to recruit. And I had lost that. So what I just had to do was to really try to visualize what muscles I was recruiting. So try and really imagine the movement. And then I could suddenly, from not being able to do that foot movement, then do it again. I'm talking like a 6B movement. We're talking really easy
but it's
stuff.
Rebuilding those like neural pathways, isn't it?
Yeah. So you're really working on a new body. This is what's quite difficult, because it's in 9 months your body completely changes, and I think it really rarely happens in an athlete's life, in anybody's life actually.
Are you suffering from chronic disease, or maybe you're trying to live to 120 and optimize your health? Either way, the Your Health, Your Story podcast is for you. My name's Casper Schultz, and I've been traveling the world meeting with top doctors and experts in medicine and health with amazing discoveries that are making the incurable curable. I decided I had to share these stories to empower others who are seeking solutions but just couldn't find them. So join us for weekly enlightening discussions on how to beat chronic disease and live an incredibly healthy life that you won't hear about elsewhere.
So how long was it before you, from Arthur being born to when you first climbed again?
So I first climbed again when he was one month and a half.
Okay, yeah, so 6 weeks, that's kind of quite often when women get the green light to exercise.
And sometimes it will take more than 6 weeks to get the green light, depending on the birth. If you had a C-section, it's more than that. And I just did some outdoor 5B slabs. So really easy. And then I kind of built myself a tiny program, but I had obviously really heavy sleep deprivation. And even if James, I have no idea what we were doing. It was both James and I focused on baby for like 3 months, and we were both exhausted. So it's, I can't start to imagine what it is to be a mom if your husband has to go back to, husband, boyfriend, whatever, has to go back to work straight away. It's terrible for him. It's terrible for you.
Yeah.
So if you can take some holidays, take some holidays there.
Yeah.
So I started climbing, and I started with a tiny training program. It was only like half a kilo weights in my hands, and trying to do several movements, like lifting weights in different directions. to very slowly build my body tension again and climb on slabs, but just doing 5-minute traverses. And that was it. And that was the very best I could do anyway, because Arthur wouldn't give me more than 5 minutes.
Mm. And was that directed, but you know, the exercises you were doing, were they specific kind of postpartum recovery exercises from somebody else, or you just made up some stuff?
I definitely checked with the midwife, and she explained me how to pay attention to the position of the pelvis. Because mm-hmm. that's, first of all, you need to, this is super specific, but you need to make sure you rotate your hips and to protect your pelvis, and then you can start any exercises. But to be honest, you should always be doing that anyway, pregnant, not pregnant, women, men. It's just as a back protection, this is quite good anyway. And then I started training very slowly. When I'm saying very slowly, but clearly I went too fast, because when Arthur was 6 months, I thought I was more or less back there, and I started working on an 8B plus route. But I chose something that was really steep, like it was actually a roof, kind of the worst. And I thought the best, obviously, because I would have to try really hard. But obviously, I had to work on the route a lot, and I was repeating hard moves for me with not enough body tension, and I injured a bicep.
Okay.
So I had an injury, and it lasted for a full year.
Wow, okay.
And I was still climbing, but obviously I couldn't do any pull-ups, so that wasn't great.
And you think that was really tied into your core not functioning well enough, and so you're overcompensating?
Just asking myself too much too fast.
Too much, yeah.
Yeah. You're not sleeping well, your core can't compensate, and you go too far too soon. So it's very difficult, because you have to push yourself, because... Or at least, like I told you, I had this temptation to just not get back, not train, not get back, and focus on baby. And this other side of myself trying to push myself to come back. And I just didn't find the right balance. And that's very, very difficult, actually.
And probably quite common, I think, you know, like a lot of women, whether it's climbing or whether, you know, other career focus, I can see how, like, you could lose that identity, could get quite blurred. And yeah, you could be drawn in different directions with it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, from the moment you become a mom or dad, actually, you have two directions of brains. And this is where I never really realized what people were saying. You know, you have your family and your work, because for me, everything was hand in hand anyway, and there was no antagonism. And once you've got a kid, you realize every hour you take at work is an hour you haven't taken for your kid. And unless you manage to find a way to sort of marry that. And I think we found, James and I, we found a way. We bring Arthur everywhere. Mm-hmm. He's outside biking right now with James when I'm answering. But you are definitely, this is the beginning of being torn between two sides, and it will not stop. But I think maybe it's called being an adult.
Yeah. And do you think that you've kind of redefined your relationship with climbing a little bit since having Arthur? Like it's back and it's there, and you're Caro the climber and you're Caro the mum, but you're the Caro the climber's maybe just like changed a bit?
This is definitely yes, 100% yes. I've said that in the beginning, my third life as a climber.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Because I think quickly I realized I needed to find a space. Like I'm telling you, it would be great if you can find this mental space for yourself, just because I think at some point, maybe some moms are really happy with that, being just a mom. But I soon realized I needed this identity. I needed to be, again, Caro the climber, which was my mental space. But I didn't have endless amount of times. And I'm sure you must have been there as well sometimes. You're just a climber, you're training, and you have all the time in the world to train, and sometimes you turn up at the gym and you're not motivated. And you go to the crag and you just think, yeah, the rock's a bit shit, it's a bit wet. So you still climb, but you're just being a bit, you know,
lackluster. Yeah.
And once you become a parent, every minute, and I'm saying literally every minute where you get to climb is a bonus. It's positive. It's time for yourself. And so since I've become a mom, I've really totally rediscovered my love for climbing. So I am much more keen on climbing than I was just before. And I'm not saying I wasn't. It's just that I'm even more. Mm. And so that's super positive, I think, in terms of... I guess I just found more balance in my life.
Mm.
And it's exactly the same for James.
Yeah,
because he's having to fight the same fight than me, because he's just taking care of Arthur a lot. And then sometimes Arthur's having a snooze and we've got 45 minutes. He can project, or I can project, I can go in my route. It's like you put your laces, you put your shoes on as fast as possible, and it's time for you. And this is great. And so we've been able to go on absolutely terrible rock and get a wonderful time and have an amazing time. And I know exactly, Carol, the not mom, she would have not even put her climbing shoes on.
Mm, yeah, yeah, it's really different then, isn't it? I guess you just appreciate it more.
Yeah, 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 totally. So I think this is just really, really positive. And I think this happens to most parents.
I've definitely had friends say that I've had one friend say he did his hardest climbs after having a child because he was suddenly really focused and he would get up at like 5 a.m. to train.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, when he went to the crag, he was never like you say, lackluster or unpsyched.
No
or all conditions aren't good. It was like, don't even have time to think about that. And he climbed some of his most satisfying things and had a really positive.
But this is definitely what's happened to us. I think James he's done his hardest boulder grade, he's done his harder trad grade, and he's done his hardest sport grade this year.
That's cool.
With a 1.5-year-old. And I've gone back to my best level. Mm-hmm. And it's going to sound cheat for you, but I've done my first 8A boulder, which I had never done.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm just, better.
That's cool.
Weirdly. But it's taken 2 years, for sure. It's taken a long time.
Yeah, because I think, like, going back to that initial postpartum period, I think we often hear about that green light at 6 weeks. And people think, oh, cool, you'll be climbing again at 6 weeks. But that's like when you first start to take baby steps, I guess, back to it. And you also hear this, I've heard people say 9 months in, 9 months out. It takes 9 months to make a baby and then 9 months before you're...
At the very least, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah. Most people that have had children that hear that, they go, at least 9 months.
Yeah, 9 months is, if everything's perfect, you've got 4 grandparents and they can take off and leave you alone.
Oh dear, I've not got that.
Yeah, most people don't. No, it's... I think you have to be patient. It's really this balance. You have to be motivated, but give yourself time. But I think, again, parenting teaches you to be patient.
Yeah.
Because you have no choice. So.
And also, when we're talking about those timescales, we are talking about physical performance, recovery, not necessarily... You're not going to enjoy climbing for 2 years or 9 months or however long.
No, definitely not.
You can
not.
Get that, like you said, that relative feeling like, I'm on the rock. Maybe,
oh, yeah,
maybe
for
my
sure.
core isn't working as well as it could, but, you know, you're really enjoying the problem solving or the kind of...
Yeah, and you get this, because it's this new body, it's like round two, you know?
Mm.
Like your first 6A post-baby, your first 6B post-baby. And so, yeah, it is every victory after baby... I mean, you do feel different, so...
Yeah.
I think it will be... I mean, I'm really hoping it will be as fun for you.
Yeah. I'll let you know in 6 months or
something.
So
6A!
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. And you and James have also travelled quite a lot with Arthur. How has that been, like, just from a logistical perspective? You've done some fairly adventurous trips and...
Yeah, we've been actually the most adventurous thing we've done is we've gone to Ethiopia in February. It was a full-on expedition. Logistically it was so obviously it sounds easy, you can boulder with a baby. That's not easy, actually. Even that is actually really, or at least our baby is not easy. A lot of people say until they walk, it's fine.
Mm,
it wasn't fine
because you
us.
Can put them down and they stay put.
It didn't work for us. Our baby didn't stay put. It wouldn't. It's a baby. I don't know. I think it's because I had such an active pregnancy. He was used to movement, so you couldn't put him down.
Mm.
So it was always me or James had to move him. Day and night.
Okay, or hold him. Or, yeah.
No, holding him sat didn't work. You had to hold him and walk.
Oh, wow, okay.
So I wanted an active baby and we didn't want him to be like, we just wanted a baby who jumps everywhere. We didn't realize that he wouldn't sleep like that.
Mm.
But I'm not saying all children are not like that, but you could very well have a baby like that.
Mm.
But it will get better at some point. And I definitely remember the first months just thinking I will never get back. How can I get back to having a normal life if I can't have 5 minutes for a shower?
Mm.
So when I told you about weightlifting, this is weightlifting with a baby on me while walking in the house because I couldn't put him down. So I think it sounds like I'm exaggerating, but I'm not. It really was like that for the first months. That's why I told you it's really difficult.
So bouldering can still be quite hard. So then what was Ethiopia like?
So yeah, bouldering was really difficult because we couldn't spot each other.
Yeah, of course.
But
yeah.
The good side is we learned, I found my courage finally. Mm. I learned to place my pads well and figure out how to not fall in wrong positions. And
sure.
I think I have become bolder than I was before having a baby.
Okay.
Because it was the only way for me to be a climber.
Sure.
So we've managed to find a way to root climb, and that involves a lot of solo belaying.
Okay, like shunting.
Yeah. So okay. There's been a lot of watching Pete Whitaker's videos figuring out the best way. Shunting, or we use the Revo a lot from Wild Country. We attach the Revo around a tree.
Okay.
And maybe the other parent is playing with the kid and just pulling the rope, but like from maybe 10 meters further.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that works on top rope. We've even done it on lead on warm-ups.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm not saying it. This is not textbook, but it worked for us.
You will not find this in a textbook.
No. But I mean, you just have to make compromises.
Mm.
So what we do is we solo belay for all the warm-up routes and then... The one moment for working a route is when baby's sleeping, having a nap. And then we try short routes so that the attempt is 5 minutes and the baby is playing at the foot and it's fine.
Yeah.
And it's going better and better. Now he's 2 years old and it's easier and easier.
Mm.
Obviously, you can't do multi-pitch with a baby.
Yeah.
That doesn't work. So we went to Ethiopia and it was multi-pitch crowd climbing. And that was never going to work just with us two and a half.
Sure, yeah. I'm like wonder what you're going to say next.
So this is the best thing because we couldn't go with just Arthur. We brought parents.
Okay, great,
Jem's mom, who she's never left Europe before, and my dad, who actually traveled. So Jem's dad, he was working, he couldn't come. My dad, he's retired, so he could come, and he's traveled a lot in Africa when he was younger, but in very different situations. So we had a chance to bring them into our life.
Mm.
And without Arthur, we would have never had this excuse. So we literally threw them in the middle of nowhere in Ethiopia. Bye-bye, we're going climbing for like sometimes a full day. But I think it wasn't easy for them. It was a really, really good experience.
Mm.
And it was great for us as well because we knew our baby was getting to play with local kids, little Ethiopian kids. He was like thrown into a really different culture. And I think, of course, he would not remember anything, but I think this is really good for him to be open-minded. And so, yeah, we did trot climb on some really bad rock. We climbed some unclimbed towers.
Yeah.
It was great. And this February was the first time I was placing trot gear again after baby. And this is definitely the boldest routes I've done in terms of like really bad rock.
Mm.
Why? I don't know. I mean, some people are thinking you shouldn't take risk once you're a mom. And I sort of disagree. I've gone a long way. Huh? I don't come from this background. I didn't grow up in the Peak District, not quite. But I've come to realize if you accept to take more risk, you'll get a better quality of life. It's tricky, but I mean, you can go a long way the other direction. Stop taking your car, stop traveling. Stop like eat only things that you know about. And basically you remove all the unknown elements from your life, but you also remove all fun elements from your life.
Sure. It's a balance, I guess, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. And I think when you become a parent, you realize you will not be able to shelter your kid from everything. There's no way. unless you make a bubble kid who's got a miserable life. You want your kid to climb in trees, for example.
Yeah, of
and
course.
If he climbs in a tree, he might fall and break his leg or worse. It's always possible. And so you have to become an example for your kid that risk-taking is part of life. So weirdly, I think I've become, I'm not saying I'm very bold, but I've become bolder since becoming a mom.
Yeah. I guess also as climbers, we take calculated risks because, you know, you're an experienced climber. You know the difference between a kind of reckless risk and a calculated risk. So although the consequences may be high, if things did go wrong, they're actually unlikely to go wrong because you mitigate a lot of those factors by using equipment and checking things, and you know what loose rock might feel like. You tap it first, you know, all that kind of stuff. So yes, you're up there climbing, but your wealth of experience helps to actually lower that risk quite a lot. And I think outsiders to climbing don't see that.
Yeah, this is a very, I think this is a very complex matter. It's really about risk management, like you're saying. But I think life is about risk management if you want to have fun. You can't go swim with crocodiles. This is not risk management. So, I think this is my choice as of parenthood and James' choice of parenthood, because this is, I think James' vision of life is like that. So right now, Arthur is 2 years old and he's doing all sorts of things that are really not supposed to be okay for children. But I knew, and I guess Dave is going to be just the same. I know there's no way I cannot harness that in James because that's his personality. And I think this is totally fine. It's really not well looked. I don't know how to say that in English. People don't like that in modern society.
Sure. Yeah, you're not it's like supposed
to.
Upon.
Yeah, you're not supposed to let your baby walk on a wall, for example. Especially if the wall is 3 meters high. But James would do that. And I can really see the results already in terms of risk management. Arthur is getting there. I'm not saying he's not in control of all risks, but he doesn't jump into nowhere. He's learning already. And I think this is my take on how we should handle life.
Yeah, I guess it's a balance between building a kind of confident child and also, you know, as a parent, our one responsibility is to keep them alive, right?
Yeah.
So it's like,
oh, I might go to prison for
stuff. Yeah.
Well, that's not easy. Yeah.
Yeah. And just one other thing actually about the physical recovery. I know not all women choose to breastfeed, and I don't actually know whether you did or not,
I did,
or were able to. Because obviously for some women, it's also not a choice. They can't for whatever reason. But that can also affect your energy levels and does it keep your joint laxity going for a little bit longer? Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, I think it's about, what's the name of that hormone?
Relaxing.
Yeah. So you have to be even more careful if you're breastfeeding when you train again. I did feel the difference because I was much more flexible after birth. There are good sides, right?
Yeah.
And I decided I'm going to try and keep that. So I kept on training on my flexibility. I'm not saying I'm very flexible now, but it's better than before. But the downside, it means that you can strain your ligaments way more easily. And I was belaying a girlfriend who just, she had a 9 months old and she was still breastfeeding. And in front of my eyes, she was just doing a heel hook and she completely tore her knee ligament doing nothing. Oof. And it's relaxing. So I think this is really one thing to be super careful about, but at the same time, you don't really know and you are training on a body that feels bad. There's no way around that. If you wait until you're feeling great, I don't think you'll ever feel great again because you need to train on that exhausted body. So it's really tricky. I think it's okay to think that you will not find a perfect balance and you will do small injuries or you might go a bit too slowly and because it's you're a newbie in that thing and there is really zero information into how to train after baby. It's not a thing. I think this is totally a subject that is under talked. And I don't know why, because well, half of the population goes for having babies.
Sure.
So I think we need to talk about this more. We need to give more information to people, and we need to stop saying be a mom first of all, because I think that's another thing. A lot of moms feel too guilty to go back to training because they're being told they shouldn't be doing that. They should focus on their baby.
And it's okay to still be your own self and have your own identity in life.
Exactly.
And wants and needs. And
I think it's better. I mean, I'm not saying it's needed. A lot of moms are feeling great with some years of no self identities. But for me, that was better like that.
Sure. And before we started filming and recording this chat, you were telling me some good hacks. You were like, I've got some good hacks for parenthood. So what would be like your top, I don't know, three hacks for, and it doesn't necessarily need to, you know, any time in the last 2 years.
Yeah. Okay. My number one, and I'm not saying it works for every baby. I think it works for a lot of baby, is the baby carrier. Mm-hmm. So that was a present from James' best friend before baby. And it was actually, it is quite expensive. So a lot of people don't really want to do that. You need a really good baby carrier because that will allow you to carry an infant. Because a lot of baby carrier, they don't allow you to have babies under 3 months old.
Okay, and that's right.
I mean, 4 months is a very long time if your baby's crying. So it's good because it allows you to get back to fitness because you go on walks.
You can move, yeah.
And in some situations, it can really help baby cry less, simply be happier because he's against your body and his dad's body because it's mom and dad can do that. So that's trick number one. And I think to me, this is absolutely essential. Trick number two is a baby tent. Mm-hmm. If you want to go climbing, if you're any climber, you go outdoor for a full day, and any baby needs a 2 hour nap at some point. Arthur needs still two naps a day.
And here he is.
So any baby needs two naps a day. It means either your climbing sessions are extremely short and frustrating, or your baby can nap where he is. Mm-hmm. Wim baby.
This is real life.
I guess there's an emergency. I don't know what it is. So it's not easy. Huh? It's really not. Babies, you don't press a button and they go to sleep. Actually, that's another one. But this is not climbing specific. But we had to actually train our baby to fall asleep because he didn't understand how to do that.
Okay.
It looks, everybody thinks the baby should know how to sleep, but it's not true. Anyway. You might need to call me one day if you do.
You get a call out of the blue.
I have a whole baby sleeping program. Nice. It's real. It's a real thing. Anyway, the way we did was to buy the baby tent very early on. And as soon as he learned to snooze out of our arms, instead of putting him in his cot, we put him in his baby tent. Actually, we started with putting the baby tent in his cot.
Okay, nice. Yeah.
And then a second step, always baby step after baby step, was to put the cot in a lighter place. Mm-hmm. So he would learn to sleep in a light place. And then the first step was to put a music background. Mm-hmm. So then suddenly you can reproduce that environment at the crag.
Okay, yeah.
So baby tent, bright, and some music. And he's 2 years old and he sleeps in that now.
That's amazing. Very creative.
I think, it's called a climber survival. And this is the best moment when the baby is sleeping, you can actually really, really climb. So
yeah.
I'm trying to find a third trick.
Those two were pretty good.
The Revo, I mean, this is, at that point, it's going to be an advert for a brand, but you need a belay device that allows you to self-belay, and you need to develop a technique. A lot of people will not be confident with that, but at least on top rope, you need to be at least able to have somebody belay with a baby in the hand on top rope. And that's, you need a really good belay device for that, something that you can really trust.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. That's great. I mean, we've covered loads. So thank you so much for this conversation. It's been really interesting for me, obviously, being pregnant. Kind of forgotten a few points that we've been recording.
Yeah, no, but I'm sure you will. Yeah. I'm sure if you need any extra tricks. I don't have all the answers, but it is a really hard time ahead of you.
I'm sorry to say that.
But ultimately, this is the best thing that's happened in my life.
Yeah.
And I've got a good husband, but I mean, still, baby is the best thing that's happened.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Oh, well, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. And for people listening, it's worth checking out. Kara's done some writing as well about pregnancy.
And James has done some writing.
And James
well.
Has done some writing as well.
It was hard for him too.
Yeah. Of course. So worth checking that out. And if you have time, it would be great if you could review the podcast if you have enjoyed this episode or any of the other ones that you've listened to.